QST from W1AW, the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio in Newington, Connecticut. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for September 21st, 2016. The ARRL Aries Audio e-letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries e-letter, which is compiled by Rick Palm, K1CE in Daytona Beach, Florida. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland, and my audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland. Here are the headlines for this month. September is National Preparedness Month. Spotlight, Georgia Mountains District Aries, trains on public event communications support. Western Washington Section Manager comments on June's Cascadia Rising. Letters, 12-hour shifts. Tech tips, the North Country's solar-powered APRS digipeaters. Get on board the Simplex contest train. And K1CE for a final. Those are the headlines. Here are the stories. And we start off with, September is National Preparedness Month. Don't wait, communicate. Make your personal, family, CERT, and Aries emergency plans today. September is National Preparedness Month, or NPM, which serves as a reminder to prepare now and throughout the year for the types of emergencies that could affect us where we live, work, and visit. And for Aries members, September also marks the beginning of the ARRL set period responses. For more information, including a social media toolkit, please visit www.ready.gov/September. That URL again is www.ready.gov/September. In June 2003, ARRL became an official affiliate program of Citizen Corps, an initiative within the Department of Homeland Security to enhance public preparedness and safety. The Statement of Affiliation makes the ARRL an affiliate under the four Charter Citizens Corps programs. They are the Neighborhood Watch, Volunteers in Police Service, Community Emergency Response Teams, and Medical Reserve Corps. You may also visit www.ready.gov/make-a-plan to help you make your plans. That URL again is www.ready.gov/make-a-plan. Also, in recent Facebook posts and tweets from @ARRL_Aries, ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U, gives tips on how to prepare ourselves and our stations for emergency and disaster response. A recent post suggested, communication becomes easier when you know what band fits your needs. Learn how to determine the best band for getting the message to where it needs to go. Get set for ARRL set, the simulated emergency test. The ARRL encourages you to consider this year's simulated emergency test and preparations for it as a demonstration of amateur radio's readiness and as an active participant in National Preparedness Month. The SET is a nationwide exercise in emergency communications administered by ARRL field organization leaders, including emergency coordinators, district emergency coordinators, section emergency coordinators, and net managers. The SET weekend gives communicators the opportunity to focus on the emergency communications capability within their communities while interacting with NTS NETs to participate in this year's emergency test. Contact your local ARRL emergency coordinator or net manager. ARRL sections, Aries teams, and nets may conduct their exercises anytime during September through December. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for September 21st, 2016, and I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Please let us know if your repeater is airing or if you're listening on your smartphone to the audio version of the ARRL e-letter by sending an email to kz3ab@arrl.net. Please include the day, time, location, repeater call sign, frequency, and any sponsoring club. That email address again is kz3ab@arrl.net. You may also find us on Facebook or Twitter by searching for ARRL. Thank you for your support. We're going to pause now for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. Stand by. We'll be right back. Spotlight, Georgia Mountains District Aries, trains on public event communication support. The mountainous Northwest Georgia District Aries program supports 4 public events each year as training exercises for its operators. This month, the organization is supporting the Georgia Jewel Foot Races of 35, 50, and 100 miles and the 7 aid stations situated along the course. Aries operators establish communication centers at each station and track all runners for event safety and progress. The 36-hour event in the mountains has only 5% cell coverage, hence the focus on amateur radio for essential communications. Last year, the DEC for the district and for the Georgia Digital Program at Large, Frank Dean, K4SJR, moved the operation from a VHF-UHF-FM voice platform to Winlink Packet. Mr. Dean reported, "We sent just under 400 messages via VHF packet. It was so much easier than sending 150 runners' information from station to station by voice. From the start of the race in Dalton, Georgia, we had a complete spreadsheet of all runners and their locations on the course." During this year's event, Mr. Dean added more communications tools at the Net Control Center on the summit of Johns Mountain, elevation 1,880 feet. These additions included a 70-centimeter repeater, 6 packet gateways with 2 VHF digipeaters, and a portable D-Star repeater for use with 6 area D-Star repeaters. Systems new and old have been tested twice in the last 2 months, with trials of different antennas and modes at all aid station sites. Mr. Dean goes on to report 100% reliability of packet radio and D-Star and D-Rats at all aid stations. They are ready to go for this month's event. Next April, Mr. Dean's Aries group will serve the Georgia Death Race. That's a 70-mile route over 24 hours and 40,000 feet of elevation change, which is a serious communications challenge. Western Washington section manager comments on June's Cascadia Rising. Amateur radio played a major role in the June 6th through June 10th Cascadia Rising 2016 FEMA exercise in the Pacific Northwest. This was discussed in the comprehensive, excellent September 2016 QST article titled Cascadia Rising 2016 Pacific Northwest Amateurs Called to Serve, written by ARRL Oregon Section Manager John Corr, KX7YT, and Western Washington Section Manager Monty Simpson, AF7PQ. The scenario was a magnitude 9.0 earthquake and consequent tsunami, causing a blackout of all conventional communication channels. Mr. Simpson said in his recent after-action report, "Amateur radio operators not only provided communications continuity for emergency management agencies, they worked with the Washington State Patrol, the Washington State Guard, the Washington National Guard, and the FAA. He said radio amateurs supported approximately 32 city, county, state, tribal, and federal agencies during the event. We were able to support all our served agencies and clients, Mr. Simpson recounted. Volunteers were able to provide communication support on location and during the planned participation period. U.S. amateur radio responders established cross-border communication with the Emergency Operations Center in Langley, British Columbia, which was holding its own province-wide exercise, Coastal Response. Overall, our objectives of being able to communicate with external agencies via voice and Winlink were achieved. Mr. Simpson added, "It was great to be able to participate in an exercise of this magnitude and to get a feeling for what it would be like to have this many people trying to send and receive data. All of our operators felt this was very beneficial." He also said that including amateur radio as an actual functional part of Cascadia Rising was a big plus, and that the participants felt that they were actually part of the team and not some ancillary group that was just being tolerated. Among his recommendations, Mr. Simpson said there should be more standardization on language and forms, as well as coming up with a method of establishing contact with communities that lack communication if repeaters go down. He also advised that Ares and Racy's teams exercise their equipment on a regular basis to avoid unexpected outages and failures during a real world event. Our thanks to Rick Lindquist, WW1ME, editor of the ARRL Letter, and QST contributing editor for this report. Letters, 12-hour shifts. Granted, long shifts and fatigue often cannot be avoided in emergency operations, but it comes with a price. Numerous private and public studies show that long shifts cause health problems and mistakes. Aside from the wear on personnel, it has been found that errors increase. So, as many emergency responders and the military are often taught, rest your troops. Granted, sometimes you may only have two operators to rotate and cover a position all day, every day, for a week, but everyone needs at least 1 6-hour great sleep every 24 hours to avoid excess fatigue. And almost no one can really focus for more than 2 hours at a time, meaning that even an 8-hour shift is too long if there are no breaks. Better to rotate in shorter shifts, or at least ensure the personnel literally get up, get out, and stretch their legs every hour or two. 12-hour shifts are a good way to cause bad things to happen. It's time once again for repeaters to identify. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the ARRL Ares Audio e-letter for September 21st, 2016. Our next article is Tech Tips, the North Country's Solar-Powered APRS Digipeaters. While there are a few good mountaintop automatic packet reporting systems, or APRS Digipeaters, in northern New Hampshire and Vermont, there are gaps in local coverage. Many roads and towns are in valleys, shadowed by high mountains on either side, which block access to the digipeaters. Thus, fill-in digipeaters are required. A recently introduced compact all-in-one APRS unit, consisting of a receiver, transmitter, and TNC, is easily incorporated as fill-in digipeaters. It is easily transported by off-highway recreational vehicles or backpack, and capable of operating for extended periods off the grid. A solar-powered digipeater can be employed for short-term use, as with our bike rides, or as a permanent installation. Here are a few considerations we factored into our systems. Basic design. First, in selecting the components, economy is an important consideration. Theft or vandalism at remote sites is always a possibility. We used the Bionics MTT-4B 10-watt transceiver, packaged in a plastic case about the size of two cigarette packs. The MTT-4B draws about 50 milliamps in receive mode and 1700 milliamps when transmitting. To conserve power, a system operator can program fixed coordinates into the unit. A GPS receiver draws about 65 milliamps when acquiring a set of coordinates. Alternatively, the operator can program the MTT-4B to turn the power to the GPS receiver on only long enough to get a fix and transmit a position packet. By programming the APRS transceiver to insert the call sign of the station into the packets it digipetes, the operator can use infrequent position packets and still meet FCC requirements for identification. A plastic ammunition box, or dry box, similar to a Flambeau 14-inch green plastic ammo box, is an ideal enclosure for this project. They are watertight, even in a heavy downpour. We replaced the lift-out tray with a piece of 1/8-inch thick Masonite pressed board and attached the transceiver to it. Based on the experience of a fellow ham who operated a stealth digipeater in the central part of the state, system operators can expect to have adequate reserve power for nighttime and cloudy day operation with 2 18-amp-hour sealed lead-acid batteries. Although the batteries are too heavy to be transported in the plastic dry box for any distance, a luggage strap could support the box with battery, or the batteries could be transported separately and installed in the box at the site. Batteries should be kept charged with a 35-watt solar panel, which measures about 18 inches by 26 inches. A charge controller regulates the amount of voltage going to charge the batteries. Longer battery life results when controllers sense and adjust the output voltage based on the chemistry and type of battery. The batteries are placed in the bottom of the dry box, wired in parallel, and connected first to the charge controller before the panel is connected. We placed a small shelf to fill the gap between the batteries and one end of the dry box, preventing the batteries from shifting and providing a convenient mounting point for the controller. We employed the standard Anderson power pole connectors for DC power connections. It was necessary to breach the sides of the dry box in two or three places for wires and cable. Altec sealing gland can be used to obtain a waterproof seal around the wires and cable. The solar panel comes with two heavy gauge conductors. We used two sealing glands for the power leads that bring the solar power into the enclosure. Alternately, we spliced a length of zip cord to those conductors and used one of the Altec sealing glands for flat wire, reducing the number of holes in the enclosure from 3 to 2. The remaining hole is for the coaxial cable run from the transceiver to the antenna. Since the MTT-4B incorporates an SMA connector for the antenna, the builders purchased an SMA to SO239 adapter cable made with a couple of feet of good quality coaxial wire. With the proper Altec sealing gland, the SMA connector will fit through the rubber seal. The sealing gland will close around the cable. The SO239 connector is connected to the PL259 connector from the antenna and sealed with coax seal. There is a slot in one end of the Masonite shelf. When placed in the ammunition box, the shelf will be at about the same level as the sealing gland for the coaxial cable. Thus, the slot is used to route the coax from the MTT-4B through the sealing gland without undue stress on the coax. Installation in the field and results. Our first unit was installed near the height of land of a nearby farm in 2015. A jet stream fiberglass antenna mounted on a 20-foot pole completed the setup. It has been in constant operation since then. The two batteries have more than enough reserve power, even after several days of heavy overcast, rain, or winter gloom, for the amount of traffic the digipeater is handling. The solar panel leans up against a tree with its bottom edge about a foot above ground level. It is angled up at about 60 degrees from the ground and faces south. While 60 degrees is more than optimal, 45 degrees is preferred, depending on the site's latitude. The steeper angle helps shed any snow during winter. The MTT-4B transmits its telemetry data, voltage, and internal unit temperature hourly, so we can monitor its health remotely. It relays its received packets to the APRS equipment at my home, where they are forwarded to the APRS servers by my iGate. Thanks to Bob Harris, K9UDX in Bath, New Hampshire, for this tech tip. Well, it's time once again for repeaters to identify. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for September 21st, 2016. Get on board the Simplex Contest train. Last month, we solicited information on locally oriented Simplex contests across the country, and the readership came through. Here are a few examples that may serve as models for local Aries and other groups interested in exercising and enhancing their capabilities. The Wireless Society of Southern Maine conducts its 2-meter FM Simplex Challenge each February. Originally, the challenge was created to allow all classes of licensees an opportunity to participate in a contest. It was quickly discovered that a great deal of information could be gained about VHF Simplex paths in the state of Maine to aid in emergency communications planning. The inspiration for this contest came from the Plano Amateur Radio Club of Plano, Texas. Thanks to Frank Kreisen, K5HS, the founding president of the Wireless Society of Southern Maine, for this report. Paul Lasardi, N0VLR in Corvallis, Oregon, tells us, "I wrote an article in April 2014 QST titled, 'The 2-Meter Simplex Sprint, a Contest for Everyone.' The contest inspires and boosts membership, garners knowledge of 2-meter simplex operation and capabilities, and promotes creativity with height, power, and antennas to develop communication strategies and getting to know and network with local and regional like-minded operators. Plus, it's just plain fun. Last year was our banner year for participation, and results, just like the key to house buying, is location, location, location. So goes this contest. You have to communicate, communicate, communicate. Thanks, Paul." David R. Dull, KK6JKC in San Francisco, California, replied, "The San Francisco Radio Club, in its 100th year, W6PW, held its second annual 2-meter QSO party in August." Stan Frosseth, AH6KO in Kailua Kona, Hawaii, wrote, "The Aulani Hui Amateur Repeater Club sponsors the Hawaiian Islands Grid Madness. It is an event for all hams in the state of Hawaii. This event is designed for fun and to test equipment, coverage, and operating skills using Simplex FM on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. The idea is to contact as many stations in as many grid squares as you can using Simplex only." And M.D. Smith, WA4DXP in Huntsville, Alabama, tells us, "The Huntsville, Alabama Amateur Radio Club engaged 2 Simplex Sprint contests in 2015 and again in 2016, with another scheduled for next year on June 17, 2017. Our thanks to all that replied." And lastly, we have K1CE for a final. Rick Palm tells us, "I rode out Hurricane Hermine in a cabin in the Suwannee River in the northern Florida basin, which was just to the east of landfall, with emergency supplies, water, and battery-powered station and antennas. During the day, September 1st, prior to the storm's arrival, I charged batteries and monitored area repeaters and the Hurricane Watch Net on 14.325 megahertz. Later that evening, I checked into the Columbia County Amateur Radio Society Emergency Net on the group's Lake City NF4CQ repeater. I listened to the weather reports from operators in the coverage area. After that net closed, I checked into the Alachua County Aries Racy's net on Gainesville's repeater. Both nets were controlled by excellent net control stations. The nets ran efficiently and effectively. After that net closed, I scanned area repeaters and listened to NOAA weather broadcasts. At 1 a.m., the wind rose and sounded like a freight train. Trees and limbs hit the ground. Power mains went out. But I monitored my radios for information on battery power. Thanks go to the Hurricane Watch Net and the area Ares groups and nets cited above for a job well done. That concludes the ARRL Ares Audio e-letter for September 21st, 2016. The ARRL Ares Audio e-letter is a monthly service of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio. The ARRL Ares Audio e-letter is a voice version of the ARRL Ares e-letter, compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE in Daytona Beach, Florida. You may read the ARRL Ares e-letter on the internet at www.arrl.org/ares-el and click on the issue that you'd like to read. I'll repeat that URL. It's www.arrl.org/ares-el and click on the issue that you'd like to read. If you'd like to listen to the voice version of the e-letter, you may click on www.arrl.org/ares-e-letter-audio-version and click on the issue that you'd like to hear or download. To learn more about amateur radio or to get the latest in amateur radio news, visit us on the web at arrl.org. You may also find us on Facebook.com by searching for ARRL. And you may also tweet us on your iPhone at @ARRL_Ares. If you have any questions about amateur radio in general or the ARRL, you may also write us via snail mail at ARRL 225 Main Street, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. Or you may give us a call. It's toll-free at 1-888-277-5289. We are always happy to answer your questions, and you need not be an ARRL member. Our thanks to this month's contributors. My audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland, and I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Copyright 2016 ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved. Thanks for listening, and 73.